Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association, real education for people who believe in real food. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, joining you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is a chilly day. I keep looking at the 7-day, 10-day weather forecast, and out there somewhere is that warm day. I started my seeds yesterday, and that usually puts me in like a warm, excited spring mood, and I don't know. I was like, well, they're started. So I'm growing three different types of heirloom tomatoes, which I'm super excited about, and some tomatillos and some epazote. But I don't know. It's too cold to be excited about spring. Every year I go through this kind of like seasonal malaise. I think it has to do with like the time shift, and it's still cold and now it's dark again in the morning. So I'm trying to psych myself up. But in good news, I'm so much better than I was last week and even better than I was the week before. So thank you for sticking with me through. Dave is giving me the cheers. Thank you for sticking with me sounding like a, you know, 36-year-old version of Janis Joplin, who is not excited to be anywhere outside of her bedroom. Last week on the show, Allison and I talked about people in an environment. I can't remember if we were talking about work. Dave, do you remember? Were we talking about work or just life in general? Where hardworking people get rewarded with hard work.
Yeah, I think just in general and like, you know, being able to balance it all.
So did you read or hear this NPR story? It was apparently also on The Atlantic that there's a scientist from Hokkaido University who has researched ant colonies and has surmised that there are lots and lots of lazy ants in colonies and has made the leap to human behavior, which is not that's not unusual.
Not unreasonable.
Unreasonable. And when it works in my favor, I totally support that. But in this case, it made the leap to, well, there's a reason that people are lazy, and the reason we have lazy ants, or that they fulfill a function in a society. So the lazy ants fulfill the function of when things get really bad and intense, like we have to move this colony because there's a 3-year-old trying to dig us up every single day, then the lazy ants suddenly snap into action, and you've got this whole like backup army. And he made the leap that that's what also would happen with human beings. Like when things really get tough, the person who's on their cell phone at the office all day is suddenly gonna like work really hard. And I was like, nope. Look, if you're choosing an apocalypse buddy and you look around your office, you're not going to choose Sheila, who's constantly on her cell phone playing Bejeweled Blitz.
Definitely not Sheila.
Not at all. And I was like, well, first of all, you'd have to recognize that you are a lazy ant, which I think is not in the human nature. I think everyone thinks they're a hard worker because that's what we value as a culture. So no one thinks of themselves as the lazy ant, but somebody's like, there's a lot of lazy ants, so somebody's lazy. So you have to recognize that you're a lazy ant, first of all. And then second of all, be okay with that. And just look around and be like, why would I want to work any harder?
Own it. Yep.
I own it. I don't know. It really rubbed me the wrong way. And it's really been sticking in my cross. And I kind of want to write a strongly worded letter to the scientist and be like, you have let all of these people off the hook that
you
I
should
have
do that. Let's compose it right now.
Dear, let's see. I have his name. Professor Isuke Hasegawa, I think. Dear Professor Hasegawa, my name is Emily, and I work with a lot of college students, many of whom could be described as lazy ants.
I'm taking dictation.
Not all of them, but some of them. And for you to go ahead and tell them that that's okay, that it fulfills an evolutionary purpose? Come on. Okay. I got it out of my system, mostly. I'm sure I'll come back to it before the half an hour is out. But before the half an hour is out, I want to introduce my guest who is joining me live in the studio, Miss Emmy Kane. Hi.
Hi.
So you are from Mobile Kitchen Classroom. I'm trying to make an awesome segue between lazy ants. You are, if there could be a fundamental opposite of lazy ant, it is you.
I think so. Well, I'd like to think so. I'm really a lazy ant.
I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe I'm a lazy ant. Oh my God, that's the first time that possibility occurred to me. Okay, we're going to just put the lazy ant conversation aside for a second, because seriously, that just like rattled me for a second. Because no, there's no way. There's no way. There's no way. Okay. So you work for a not-for-profit, right, called Mobile Kitchen Classroom. And this is an organization very close to my heart because you work with kids, primarily high school age kids. And there is an educational component that is partnered with Stone Barns, but you work with an organization called Shift that oversees the Mobile Kitchen Classroom. So why don't you give us an overview of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so Shift is the media partner for Mobile Kitchen Classroom. So we're not on the not-for-profit side, but we have been partnering with them and helping them kind of get the message out of what the Mobile Kitchen Initiative is, which is cultivating food citizens. So that's students, and particularly in this case high schoolers, that are informed about where their food comes from, how it's grown, how they choose to purchase it, and the stories that they tell around it.
So how are they coming to you, like, in that first meeting? What is their reaction when you guys show up? Are they like, I want to stick with my Slim Jims, or are they open to the idea of change?
It's been pretty fun. So I myself am not an educator, so I'm kind of the fly on the wall in the classroom. Usually they're taking photos for social media and other things. But it's been so fun to watch them come in, and you know, sometimes they look at food and they'll make a connection to something they've seen in their grandmother's kitchen. Sometimes it takes them a minute. Sometimes they have no desire to want to try it, but they will.
Is this something that their teachers are bringing in, or their principals are bringing in, or are they opting in like an voluntary after school type setup?
It kind of depends on the schools that we're working with. So it's a little bit of a mix of both. But generally, everyone who's there wants to be there, you know, in some capacity, which, you know, is pretty beautiful.
That's a big, 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 big component in selling kids on an idea, like make them think it's theirs.
Exactly.
So there are three prongs to your approach, right? So you deal in, why don't you tell us how you come at this?
Yeah. So it's viewing food through the lens of culture, politics or justice, and then also healthy systems. The healthy systems component is very much focused on the environment.
And I feel like talking about food justice and politics, like I have such a hard time, like there's no good news there. And it's like, I talk to my students a lot about this. They're like, you know, well, you know, if we just figure out how to solve hunger, like if we teach them how to grow legumes, I'm like, no, there's plenty of food. It's just getting the food to those people and the political hurdles and challenges that are between the food itself and the people. So the people who need it, I should say, not great news. So you guys, in terms of culture, are dealing with kids in the five boroughs, right? So they are the five boroughs of New York City. If you're outside of our listening audience, it's how we refer to Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island, and the Bronx. That is a cultural salad, right? We don't say melting pot anymore, a cultural salad. So what are some of the anecdotes that you know that what you're doing is working?
One story in particular was pretty amazing. We had a student, well, we were talking about rice and beans, so kind of a traditional Southern dish. And the students were very varied in their cultural backgrounds. And one student in particular, we spoke with him, and he talked about how he's Puerto Rican, but he said it really only shows in my name. And we asked him what that meant, and he said he didn't really feel like he had any sort of connection to his culture. It wasn't talked about at home. But after that class, he went home and he asked his dad to cook with him. And so together they cooked his grandfather's rice and beans. And it was through that experience that he came back and was like, ah, I get it. I understand my culture. I have kind of a, a peek into to where I came from and what I'm really all about.
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for like when he was like, "Hey, Dad." Did he give you any insight into that?
He didn't. No, but I wish I had been as well.
I'm just so curious. Like, I would imagine that the dad was enthusiastic because it happened, as opposed to being like, I don't want to talk about it, you know, or whatever mm-hmm. it is, which is the other side of the conversation you hear sometimes. And what about, like, you mentioned a story when we were talking off of the air about hummus and like a kid going home and like teaching their parent how to make hummus.
Yeah, he was so excited. Apparently his mom had made hummus once before, but this hummus was a white bean hummus. And so he found it to be, you know, a total feat that he was able to suggest something that wasn't a chickpea. And and he was hoping to outwit his mom and with a better recipe.
I taught in Bed-Stuy in a middle school there, and I had a rule in my classroom that you could eat, because what I found as a teacher was that my students were coming to school having not eaten sometimes dinner the night before. Sometimes dinner the night before had been a bag of Doritos. Like, I would ask them and interview them and sort of figure out what, and this was pre-culinary school, before I made this a career, that I was like, there's no way you are functioning as a human being on a bag of Doritos from 14, 15 hours ago. So I made a rule that they could eat in my classroom, but they had to be able to pronounce and describe everything on the label. And hummus was a thing that kids would bring in regularly, because they were like, it's chickpeas, salt, lemon juice, and tahini. And be like, okay, then that's cool. And it used to drive the principal crazy, because the principal and I did not see eye to eye on a lot of things, but one of them was that there was a strict no eating in the classroom rule. So all the students wanted to be in my class because it was perceived as like the fun classroom to be in. And I was like, no, it's the nutritious classroom to be in, because you need some energy. And I had a similar story. I showed them Fast Food Nation, not realizing that there was a child version or a kid safe school version of Fast Food Nation. That's the one, right? No, Super Size Me. There's a, for the educators out there who may be listening, there's a school-safe version that edited out the part about the sexual dysfunction that comes along with living on a diet of McDonald's, and I didn't know that, and so it was a little bit awkward. But happily, what happened was my students would go home and then come back and tell me that they told their parents about it, which was like the most heartwarming thing, because you said that they're about to be consumers, like they're on the cusp of making their own decisions.
They are, and they're so vocal. Like you said, they're vocal at home, which is huge, and that's really where you start those conversations, is around the family dinner table. So being able to give them the tools and just the education, not necessarily swaying them one way or the other, but giving them the tools to go out and find out what they believe in and to make those positive changes, it's huge.
And it's awesome, because that's like, if you can remember, if you haven't been around a high school student in a while, if you can remember what you were like in 10th, 11th, 12th grade, like, you knew everything. And no one's going to tell, like, if I went to a classroom and be like, you should eat hummus because it's good for you, all of those kids are going to be like, no. You could be like, or you might want to eat hummus. I mean, here's Doritos. And we could talk about what's in the Doritos, or we could talk about what's in the hummus, and you let them make the decision. Most of them make the right, you know, the quote unquote right decision that you're trying to lead them to. Mm-hmm. The other thing that you guys work with is the environment, and specifically food waste. So I'm curious how this is an area where I'm like a suburban mom and I'm ashamed at how much garbage my home produces. And so I'm curious to know how you guys approach the food waste issue.
Yeah, food waste is so, I mean, it's obviously kind of a trendy topic right now, where everyone's making something out of what we used to throw away. And we're trying to do the same thing in the classroom. So we'll take all the food scraps from the day, depending on what kind of classroom we're in. But most of the time it ends up in a bag, and we're lucky enough where we can bring it back to the farm and feed it to the animals. But it's also been a conversation of, well, what could you make with the leftovers? One recipe that we really love is actually making carrot top pesto. So we'll cook with the carrots, and then as opposed to throwing it away, grind it up, make it into a pesto. Kids love it. It's super exciting.
Carrot tops had the reputation, mistakenly for a long time, of being poisonous.
Yeah.
And they're not.
No, not at all.
Do you know? I don't know how that happened.
I'm not sure either. Another one we've done is dandelions, which also, to me, I always was told, don't eat those. But
right.
They're really good.
They're delicious. And if you know that, like, if they haven't been sprayed with anything, then they're deliciously edible. Mm-hmm. And you pay $5 a bunch in Whole Foods when they're growing in your lawn. I had been on a crusade to get the dandelions out of the vegetable garden. And then I was just like, I'm never going to beat these plants. I could just eat them and like make peace with them. And there's actually some research that says that they actually are beneficial to the other plants. Like I haven't done any blind studies on this, but supposedly they make the essential oils and herbs more potent. And so basil will taste more basil-y if it's growing next to a dandelion.
That's interesting.
Just the power of suggestion is enough for me. So in terms of food waste, I feel like for me, a big part of being bad at it is that it's just so easy to put stuff. My girlfriend sent me a cartoon that was like, never underestimate the power of putting all your stuff into a plastic bag and making it somebody else's problem. And I really, really succumbed to that. And I sort of give myself a pass. I'm like, I'm in a phase in my life with a 3-year-old who's in swimming lessons and has gymnastics and has to get picked up every, you know, I was like, I have to make lunch. And I was like, I'm like, this isn't the year that I'm going to focus on making my household less wasteful. But I think a big chunk of it is teaching the high school kids and me, reteaching me how to make purchasing decisions so that you don't end up with a whole chunk of food waste. Is that something that you guys touch on?
It definitely is. And it's having what we call mindful meals. And so you're mindfully choosing everything that you're putting on a menu. And so you really, and you should theoretically end up with a lot less waste.
And like I feel like planning for leftovers, like planning out your week and knowing what's in your refrigerator. Last week I put like on masking tape and I stuck it in the refrigerator. This is where the leftovers go. This is where the juice goes, partially to get my son, but also like, I don't want to have to look in 10 different places for where we shoved leftovers. If they just know that that's where the leftover shelf is, it's a lot easier to utilize that stuff. When we have chickens, you mentioned feeding it to the animals. It's so much easier to let stuff go because it's like, oh, well, I forgot about the white bean pesto, but the chickens are going to eat it and it'll come back as eggs and it's not being thrown away right now between chicken flocks. It's like, I don't have any animals.
It's hard.
And it's like heartbreaking. Like there's stuff I'm like, I can't believe I forgot about it. Like I made this amazing fish pie for Christmas breakfast. And then like 3 weeks later, I was like, oh, there's the rest of the fish pie. Like, oops, that sucks. And I'm like a professional thinker about these things. Very, very frustrating. Well, you guys are setting up the next generation to be much more mindful, which is awesome.
We hope so, yeah.
So we need to take a quick break. And then when we get back, if we could talk a little bit about how people who are listening, maybe from all over the country, can get involved and give everyone a little hope for the future generation.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association. The Nutritional Therapy Association, NTA, is a vocational nutrition school that develops, trains, and certifies nutritional therapy practitioners and nutritional therapy consultants to understand and reverse the tragic and unsuspected effects of the modern diet on their clients based on their bio-individual nutritional needs. There's no perfect diet for everyone. Their philosophy is that the myriad of health problems that plague modern society result from weakness in the body's physiological foundations as a result of poor nutrition, and that everyone deserves to be healthy. Throughout NTA seminars, students access a wide range of educational tools and techniques that help identify and correct nutritional imbalances from a holistic perspective, emphasizing the importance of properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole foods. Their organization was founded on the teachings of Weston A. Price and the science of Dr. Francis M. Pottinger. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am Emily Peterson, your host, joining you live from Bertha's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. With me in the studio is Emmy Kane of Mobile Kitchen Classroom and Shift. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So you guys have some big star power behind this project. Adrian Grenier is one of the founders, right?
Yeah. So he had initially kind of come up with the idea after moving back from LA. He had been seeing, obviously, all the amazing work that Alice Waters is doing, as well as Jamie Oliver. And being from New York and having grown up with food as a central focus in his lifestyle, wanted to give back to the kids in New York.
That's awesome. I mean, it's like, it's just so heartening to hear that people can become well known and use that platform for real good and tangible change, which is really, really awesome. And he grew up in a food family, right?
He did.
This didn't come out of the blue.
It didn't come out of the blue. No, he definitely, food was kind of always foremost and part of his growing up. And his parents still, or his mom and his stepdad still run a company called International Harvest that, you know, is all about organic fruits and nuts. So it's, and he still partakes in that as well. So it's kind of fun.
That's awesome. Awesome. I'm just thinking about the impact, like having parents, both my parents were big, big cooks. My dad was a commercial fisherman. I'm just thinking about the influence that they had. And for the students who don't have that in their nuclear family environment, whatever that shape that takes, that you guys are filling that role is just really heartwarming. And so what can people who are listening do to get involved if they are as excited about teaching kids about food as I am? What are some of the ways that they can reach out to you guys?
Yeah, we can definitely follow us on social media. That's been one avenue that we've really tried to elevate this food conversations, particularly around food citizens, which is our branded hashtag. So we're trying to engage people to share their own personal stories of food through culture, through politics or justice, and then also through environment. So sharing a recipe on how you're using your leftovers the next day maybe is one great way to join in.
And that you use the hashtag food citizens.
Food citizens.
Okay. And you guys are at MK Classroom on Instagram and Twitter?
And Twitter, yep. And we're a mobile kitchen classroom on Facebook.
And do you find that the students that you touch are interacting with you on social media platforms?
They haven't been as much, just purely because we haven't engaged too heavily on that side of things yet. But it's been so awesome to see people from all over the world engaging with us. And so many people have reached out and, you know, are curious about what we're doing and, you know, kind of exclaiming the fact that, you know, it's about time that we're engaging a subset of our population that's so in need of food education.
And you are in the process of launching a new website.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a soft launch, right?
A very soft launch right now, yes. But it's already an existing platform and it's a beautiful, you know, space for a sustainable and an eco lifestyle. And but we are, you know, going to be kind of moving forward and making it a beautiful space. And it's called shift.com, shft.com. So you can check us out there as well soon.
And when you say lifestyle, it's not just food, right? There's a fashion component and an art component. So how is that way?
Yeah. I mean, today we're all very multifaceted consumers, right? So it's, if you're interested in fashion, you might also be interested in food. You might, you know, be interested in what a sustainable car looks like even. So it's really providing a place for, you know, anyone to kind of take a first step and take a second step into a sustainable lifestyle.
I love that because I get asked a lot, like, what kind of food publications do you read for fun? And it's like, that's work. Like, and I wish it wasn't. Like, there was a time when sitting down with, like, Lucky Peach felt like real relaxation. And now it's like, I mean, I still love it and I still love reading Edible and I still, you know, but it's very much part of my job, but I always say I don't want to read about fashion. So it's kind of nice to have a one-stop shop. I will say I'm wearing an ethically sourced sweatshirt today.
Awesome.
I'll give them a free plug because I got it on sale at Whole Foods. It's called Packed Clothing.
Very
and it's
cool.
Like you can trace every element of it. And I was like, cool. And it was on sale and it was really soft and comfortable. But the fact that here's what the thing is about sustainable food that I've come to realize. If you make it easy for people, they will follow along with you. And it sounds very much like that's what you guys are doing. And like for me, I am no fashion icon. You know, I'm very much like yoga pants and sweatshirts are kind of my speed. Make that easy for me to do it in a way that's sustainable and ethical. Awesome. Like I will buy that. I'm not going out of my way to get something made by a 4-year-old in slave labor. Like that's not at all what I want to do. So we have shift.com that's going to help me make those better decisions, which is awesome. And mobile kitchen classroom, which is right now in the 5 boroughs. Do you guys have plans to expand?
We hope so. And I mean, even from a digital side, yes. I mean, we want everyone to be involved and we think that everyone can be involved. So yeah.
Awesome. I'm going to try to be involved. I will try to remember the hashtag. I will put in a plug for my own hashtag, which is hashtag sharp and hot. on Instagram if you guys post pictures, including using the hashtag #FoodCitizens. I will send people copies of cookbooks from my collection. I have gotten a whole slew in the mail, a lot of which I'm never going to open because I don't have time and I want to give them good homes. And so if you guys want one, use the hashtag #SharpAndHot. Now, I have been saying this and I... I have a whole pile of books that have to go into the mail, including one that got returned that I've mentioned. I think this is the second or third time I've mentioned it. So if you're out there waiting for your cookbook, you know who you are. It's coming. I know. It's sitting on my dining room table, and it needs to go to the post office. But there are opportunities to get involved with Heritage Radio Network at heritageradionetwork.org, where you can listen live and get in touch with us and leave comments on the shows and see our recipes. Oh, yeah, food waste. You mentioned making broth, right? I put my broth recipe up on Heritage Radio Network. Network.org, so you can follow along and save some of your carrot peels and celery ends and onion skins and all that stuff. Otherwise, if you have a moment and you are thinking of it when you're browsing around on iTunes, if you go to Sharp and Hot and leave us a little review, that would be awesome because it helps other people who are looking around for fun podcasts to give us a try, and hopefully they like what they hear. Somebody told me, they were like, I just love listening to your voice. And I was like, really? Thank you. I wonder if my husband feels the same way. I think so. Most of the time, unless it's like a to-do list of things that I'm like, hey, can you go turn the compost pile? And otherwise, I'm trying to think. Dave, am I forgetting anything? I feel like I'm forgetting a major thing that I was supposed to say. Don't be a lazy aunt.
Yeah.
You're not a lazy aunt either, Dave.
Oh, thank you.
Not at all.
I appreciate that.
Nope, can't think of it. As soon as the mics go off, I'm like, oh, dummy. Yeah. Okay.
We'll just cut into the next show.
Wait. Just kidding. I'll come in at the top of the food scene. Emmy Kane, thank you so much for coming from at MK Classroom on Instagram and Twitter and Mobile Kitchen Classroom on Facebook and shift.com. Leave out the I. Appreciate anything else that you would need to say.
No, just thank you so much for having me come share what we're doing.
You're so welcome. Cool, everybody. Until next week, pray for warmth. Enjoy your seed starting. You are officially 4 to 5 weeks out from your last frost date, so get those seeds started if you're doing tomatoes. And until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.